It is now time, ladies and gentlemen, for our featured presentation. It is called Mic Check. And this morning, ladies and gentlemen, the conversation, decolonizing education in Jamaica. Colonization of the mind is a very terrible thing. Anthony Turner, our guest has arrived. Please introduce the guest, Anthony.
Well, Rasko, our special guest on Mic Check this morning, his name is Dr. Maurice D. Smith, who is Jamaica's 2010 Fulbright Scholar, who read for a Doctor of Education with high commendation, I must say, in educational leadership and policy from Howard University. And Dr. Smith is credited with establishment of Belmont Academy, Jamaica's first center of excellence, and having been previously engaged as the principal director of the National College for Educational Leadership, he was in 2015 appointed permanent secretary in the Ministry of Education, Youth and Information. And between 2017 and 2019, he was engaged as an international educational consultant to the World Bank, UNESCO, an organization of Eastern Caribbean states, where he provided policy and technical advice to governments across Latin America, the Caribbean, and the Middle East. He's an author, a well-sought-after motivational speaker, and he's the recipient of several awards, including the Governor General's Achievement Award in 2019 and the Prime Minister's Medal of Appreciation for Service to Education in 2016. He's also a Justice of the Peace for the parish of Kingston. So we welcome Dr. Maurice D. Smith to Groovin' Radio this Saturday morning.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. How are you?
Morning, Mike, and morning, Raskin. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am good, and I'm good. You know, and as always, whenever I have a guest from Jamaica, one of my first questions is, how is Jamaica this morning, Dr. Smith? How is Jamaica?
Well, let me also say good morning to all your listeners. Jamaica, well, it's bleak where I am in terms of the weather, which is in Kingston. And last night was particularly warm. Mm-hmm. Two or three nights earlier this week, it was very cool. We started feeling the Christmas breeze. But Jamaica's here. I was on the road earlier. The streets are busy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's much activity as it concerns preparing for the Christmas holidays. And so the shopping is on. The traffic is on. We're doing our best, and we're lifting the spirits high. We're enjoying the gifts of life, and we're dealing with our issues as a people. But it's good to be in Jamaica. It's a great place to be. Mm-hmm. The spirits are high, and we're moving on.
Thank you for that update. And our writer, Anthony Turner, is also in Jamaica. And Anthony, before you run off this Saturday morning, on the topic, Anthony Turner, decolonizing education, you look at the fact that we have been emancipated. We have gained nationhood in 1962, but we still have a colonial education, Anthony. Do you think, Mr. Turner, before you go, now is the right time to start having these conversations about decolonizing education in Jamaica, Anthony?
Well, the beauty about it, in our Rasklin, that we have already started the discussion here in the diaspora. So we are hoping that Jamaica will start having these conversations, because the time is right. There is too much happening in Jamaica, the educational system. So we need to start that education. So I applaud you for getting a guest, Dr. Smith, who can speak to this particular issue at this time.
Indeed. Anthony, we'll talk to you later. Let's move to Dr. Smith now. Dr. Smith, this is where I want to start. And I want to ask you this. I think it's a simple question. What aspect or factor should we address when we talk about decolonizing education in Jamaica to transform the transformation of Jamaica coming out of this colonial system? This is where I want to start.
Well. First of all, let's understand what we mean when we talk about decolonizing education. Mm-hmm. That has to do with looking at the legacies of our past, where we were controlled by the British Empire. And as was said earlier, Jamaica would have obtained its independence in 1962, 60 years ago. And though that has happened, and we have come a far way, for which we are thankful, when we talk about decolonizing education, we really have to look at the inherent political and societal biases, the restrictions, the limitations that cause us not to achieve our full abilities, potential as a people. And so it has to do with looking at matters relating to curriculum and identity and history, and going direct to the question that you asked, Marastin, I think we do need to look at some structural reforms. Over the years, much has been done by successive governments to decolonize education. But one of the things I wish to bring to the table, and I have been doing my best to talk about this, which is why I'm particularly happy for this engagement this morning, is to move beyond the aesthetics and move beyond the superficial changes and look at some structural issues. We would have embarked on a reform program in 2004, and here we are on the cusp of another reform program, looking at the Patterson Report, which was produced in 2021. Mm-hmm. But when I look at the two sets of recommendations, the Patterson Report had about 395 recommendations, and the Task Force of 2004 that had about 95 recommendations. They really are more or less the same. Mm-hmm. And so there are some things that we'll do. Yes, we'll talk about curriculum. It's important to change what we teach in schools, but there are some things that go much deeper than that, that the typical Jamaican isn't paying attention to. Right. For instance, the whole matter of equity. Mm-hmm. How we structure our schools. We have almost 800 primary schools across Jamaica, and we have about 180 secondary schools. And the vast majority of these kids, these 50,000 kids who leave these 800 schools each year, compete with each other to get into 10 or 20 very successful secondary schools. And the question is, why don't we ensure that all our secondary schools are resourced similarly so that the same or similar quality of education can be delivered in these schools? And those are some of the examples. That's a prime example of what I mean by structural reform. How do we move our children from primary school to secondary schools? How do we resource our secondary schools? How do we ensure that all our children in our secondary schools get access to the same quality education? That is not now the reality. When we look at the statistics, youth and crime, et cetera, the vast majority of our young people who are running afoul of the law are outputs or individuals who would have gone to a particular kind of secondary school. And so if we're going to make a meaningful intervention, mm-hmm. if we're going to make the main roads, again, we have to change up the system, change up how we organize the system, change up how we structure the system to ensure that all our children, irrespective of their color, mm-hmm. irrespective of their location, mm-hmm. irrespective of their socioeconomic status, have access to high quality education. And unfortunately, that is not now the reality. So when we talk about decolonizing education, one of the things that I'm batting for mm-hmm. is ensuring that there is equity, and that is one example of a structural reform I'd love to see our system embrace.
Mm. I want you to stick with equity for a moment there, but before we move on, you mentioned the Patterson Report, and I want folks to understand what report you're talking about, and this is the Orlando Patterson report, ladies and gentlemen. Another thing you mentioned, which is very critical, you mentioned 800 primary schools across the Highland. Yes. Does this include prep schools? Or just,
no.
Okay, so we have 800
government schools.
Okay, and then we have 180 secondary / high schools in Jamaica.
Yes.
And
again, these are public schools, so the private school system is not counted in that number.
All right, so now let's stick with the equity now, Dr. Maurice Smith, and the unevenness, the unbalance here, because it is totally unbalanced, you know. Because,
yes,
you know, in a recent conversation with the principal of Jamaica College, and we spoke about what's been taught at Jamaica College compared to what's been taught at, say, Tarrant High School, and it's two different things to a certain degree. Two different things to a certain degree.
There are a number of reasons for that, Raskin. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the kinds of, and when I say kind, if you look at the children who go to, for instance, Jamaica College, and the grades that they get having left primary school, mm-hmm. it's a world apart from the children who go to another kind of school across the road and the grades that they would have gotten. And so, again, you know, on paper, they teach the same things in terms of subject. Mm-hmm. And that's also another subject. That's a whole different conversation, because a child who leaves primary school with 70s and 80s and 90s mm-hmm. is exposed to 13 and 14 subjects in grade 7 at a certain kind of school. Mm-hmm. A different child who leaves primary schools with grades 20s and 30s, who can't spell or can't read, who can't function numerically or literate at a particular level, goes to a different kind of school and is exposed to the same 13 subjects.
Mm.
We're just moving the children across, you know, social promotion. And so the content on paper appears to be the same, but the reality is the quality of the teachers is different.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of the teaching is different.
Mm-hmm.
The resources in one school are miles apart from the resources in another school. So there is much equality in that we give all our schools the same resources. We fund all our schools based, you know, they get an amount of money. I think it's like under $20,000 Jamaican per year for children in secondary schools. But a child who goes to JC could use, I would argue for more, but a child who goes to JC with grades of 60s and 70s and 80s could suffice with $20,000. But a child who goes to a different kind of school, secondary school, who goes in with grades of 10 and 15 and 20, who can't read, that child needs additional support to come up to speed.
Mm.
And so right now, the way the system is structured is that we give all our schools the same amount of resources based on the number, not paying attention to the differences in learning styles and the performance and the real needs of the student. So if a student needs more, if a student needs more to do well, that school should get more to provide more for the student. But that's equity, but that's not how we are structured. It's a one-size-fits-all, and again, we're exacerbating and perpetuating the same problem over and over and over again.
Boy, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Grooving Radio. Our very special guest this Saturday morning is a true educator at heart. His name is Dr. Maurice D. Smith. We're taking a look at how we can start this in Jamaica, decolonizing education in Jamaica. The mind is a very terrible thing to waste, you know. And think about the legacy of slavery, Dr. Smith. Its attachment to all of this. When we talk about traditional schools in Jamaica and how those so-called traditional schools came online and who they came online for, today when you look at the uneven scale in Jamaica, and it's way off balance, you know.
It is
way off balance. And I try to tell people that when you look at the number of people who have moved on to tertiary education in Jamaica, it is very small.
Yes.
It's very small. And when you look at those, the numbers of those who have graduated high school and comes out of high schools with subjects, with 4 and 5 and 6 and upwards in terms of subjects, compared to those who have walked out of high school with nothing at all,
it is
way off balance.
Let's just probe that a little bit, Rustin, because you're making some excellent observations. So Jamaica's education system dates back to 1835, when we got financial assistance from the Negro Education Grant in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Upon the abolition of slavery in 1833, that's how we got our start. Two decades after that, there were two kinds of schools that existed. One, we had privileged schools for children whose parents were either religious leaders, civic leaders, or plantation owners.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had public schools that were established for children of the ordinary people, you know, people that had been enslaved that were recently freed. And what happened was that the privileged schools, their children had what we call a traditional academic and grammar curriculum,
mm-hmm.
the English and the maths and the science and the social studies. And the public schools that were established for children of freed slaves had other kinds of instruction, and that didn't approach, that distinction continued for centuries. So in the 100 years later, 1935, 1950, we had the same kinds of schools. And so we had the traditional high schools that were established by churches or trust funds, and then we had the other schools that were established by the government in 1960s, 1970s to give access to Jamaicans who wanted to get to school, because we were now an independent country. Mm-hmm. A government priority was to ensure that there were places in school for all children. But although that happened in terms of there was a significant increase in access, a significant increase in the number of spaces, and we're happy for that, again, we're at the point now where we have to move beyond access and now look at issues related to equity and quality and parity. Mm-hmm. And so what has continued to happen over the years is that the traditional high schools, again, they're on a path where their alumni, I mean, when you look at Kingston College, and, you know, I'm just using,
yes,
calling these,
yes,
names,
yes,
no harm intent, mad intent, or no harm intended. Mm-hmm. I mean, the alumni support is phenomenal.
Indeed.
It champion, and your Jamaica College alumni, and the alumni, the old boys and the old girls, they pump millions of dollars to augment and supplement government contributions, subventions to schools. Mm-hmm. The other kinds of schools, now Haile Selassie, mm-hmm, and we could call a number. They're right across the school system. The alumni support is not as strong, and so those schools are always playing catch up. And remember, mm-hmm, that more often than not, those schools have children that come in with grades that they are underperforming, and so they are unable to access the curriculum in as much as their peers are able to do in the other kinds of schools that have significantly more funding.
Okay.
So when you look at 60 results, I mean, up to this year, mm-hmm, when you look at the 82% of children who graduated from traditional high schools got math and English, mm-hmm, at the 60 level, mm-hmm, 82%. Mm-hmm. Technical high schools, 60%, 59.6, but let me say 60%. Mm-hmm. And for the other upgraded high schools, the other kinds of schools, just 52%.
Wow.
And so 5 in every 10 children who leave upgraded high schools across the country are just leaving with English, just English and or math. Just English and or math.
Math. Mm-hmm.
When you look at the 4 subjects, the vast majority of them are leaving with neither English nor math, or they are not leaving with at least 4 CXC subjects. And it's not to suggest that CXC is the only measure by which we measure success. It is one. I mean, the government has done a fantastic job in providing opportunities. City and Guild, CAPE, you know, CZ,
right.
Technical and vocational education, many opportunities have been provided. And now we have a policy where more and more of our children are staying in school, mm-hmm, and are being asked to stay in school until they're 18. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to do. We need to ensure that we provide opportunities, not just access opportunities, but quality access, so that our students are able to realize their full potential, so they can transition well into society and contribute in a productive manner.
Indeed. You know, Dr. Smith, you mentioned something earlier on, and you call a couple of schools, and let me just for 60 seconds, you mentioned Kingston College and Jamaica College and Campion College, yeah, and those schools. And when you look at their alumni and association, I'm just going to call one school for a moment here, and I'm going to stick with Jamaica College. And I'm going to look at what the Ashenine brothers have done up at Jamaica College, and how they have transformed that school into a kind of a private school, such, yeah, like you will see in the United States. What they have put into reconstructing Jamaica College, you see, coming out of slavery, you know, coming out of that was one of the traditional schools, Jamaica College and Mannings and Woolmers and all those,
yes,
schools.
Just
look at those schools, ladies and gentlemen. And then you look at the Trenchtown Comprehensive Schools and the Tivoli Garden Comprehensive, yes, Schools and stuff like that. The balance, the scale is just so way off. And the fact that you mentioned... Go ahead, Doc. Go ahead.
Again, you're making some excellent observations. Let me just throw this in the mix. A child who lives, for instance, in downtown Kingston, mm-hmm, or West Kingston,
mm-hmm,
if you have a few children, and there are a few children who break the glass ceiling.
Indeed.
And they are placed in Immaculate and Campion and Woolmers, and those children are celebrated as they ought to be. But you will never in your lifetime find a child from Norbrook or Cherry Gardens or Jackfield or Bethel Hills that is placed in a school downtown. You will never do that. That's what I mean by systemic inequalities that are ingrained. That's a part of the colonization where Jamaica doesn't have a race problem, but Jamaica has a class problem. Mm-hmm. And if it is that we can decolonize education and level the playing field, where again, more of our children, if not all of our children, have access to quality education. If we don't do that, or until we do that, Jamaica is not going to escape the cycle that it's in. Education, and I'm very passionate about it because education has done a world, it has made a world of difference for me. Mm. And I know what education has done for me and for others like me, and so I know what education has the potential to do for all our peoples. Mm. And so if you are in school or out of school, if you're grown or not, so wherever you are, if you can benefit from access and to quality education in a transformational manner, then that's the only way for Jamaica's future to be better and to be distinctively different.
You know, Dr. Smith, I'm happy that you mentioned that there are few who have gone to the inner city schools that have broken the glass ceiling, because I know quite a few people who have gone to places like Tivoli, who have gone to places like Charlie Smith and Trenchtown, who have broken the glass ceiling and have done wonderful. I've done amazing thing. But it's only a few. And then you also mentioned that you will never find someone from Cherry Gardens going down to Charlie Smith.
Never.
You'll never find someone from Beverly Hills going down to Tivoli. You'll never see that. But yes, once in a while, we have those who have broken the glass ceiling. Here's something that I think we have an issue with that we're not really being very honest with. And it's the thing about race and class in Jamaica. Some will say that Jamaica does not have a race problem. We have a class problem, like you just mentioned. But true to be told, Jamaica does have a race problem. Because if you look at our leadership since August 6, 1962, if you look at our leadership carefully since August 6, 1962, you would recognize that most of our leaders don't look like us.
Yes.
Most of our leaders, we are not of the same skin color and from the same background. And then for a long time in Jamaica, even in the school system, you would find people of the Chinese race, the Syrian race, the white race. You will find most of those people in particular schools in Jamaica. Schools were segregated in Jamaica for a long time.
Yes.
Whether it was segregated by race or segregated by finance, it was a well thought after segregated school system in Jamaica. And I want you to think about this, because we're going to take a break in 3 minutes. And here's a question that I want to come back with, Dr. Smith. And it's the role of government and civil society in decolonizing education in Jamaica.
Okay.
When you come back, we want to take a look at that, because it's a burning issue. Because government will say that we're doing A, B, C, and D, but we're not seeing it being played out in the school system. And for some reason, you have those who will always tell you that, yeah, man, the playing field is level. So this is where we're going to end this first segment. Is it a level or an unlevel playing field? This one will take us up to the break. It is a level or an unlevel playing field, Doc?
Very unlevel, and we'll talk some more when we come back on the break.
Dr. Maurice Smith, ladies and gentlemen, we are taking on this Saturday morning here at Grooving Radio, decolonizing education in Jamaica. It is said that the more you know, the better it is. The mind is a terrible thing to waste. And ladies and gentlemen, we have to make some serious investment in the education system in Jamaica. If we want to see a better Jamaica, yes, we have had some very bright minds to come out of Jamaica. We have had Nobel Peace Prize winner coming out of Jamaica. But does that mean that we are a true success? No, it doesn't mean that we are a true success. The playing field is an unlevel playing field in Jamaica. We're going to take a break. When we come back, after the 11 o'clock hour, we will continue our conversation with the true educator, Dr. Maurice D. Smith. Stay where you are, sir.
Blessed love, this is Dwayne Stevenson from Augustown. And anytime I find myself in a New York state of mind, you know, I always tune in to Grooving Radio, night or day. I so we play. Keep it grooving.
And thank you so much, Mr. Dwayne Stevenson, for bringing us up for the final 25 minutes of the Grooving Radio Experience presentation this Saturday morning. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. The conversation this morning, decolonizing education in Jamaica, the challenges that we face. Colonization of the mind, it is indeed a very terrible thing. My very special guest this morning, I dub him a true educator, Dr. Maurice D. Smith, has now joined us right here on Grooving Radio. Welcome back, Doc.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Raz.
One short note before we move along, Doc. I have some civic duty to do, and this one is to remind the entire community that the American Foundation for the University of the West Indies, they're getting you ready for their 26th annual Legacy Gala, and this one will take place on Thursday, April 20th. You can call Miss Anne-Marie Grant at 212-759-9345 for more information. That is 212-759-9345 for more information. And we're talking about education, so it's fitting that we promote the University of the West Indies in there, huh, Doc?
It'll be 75 years as of 2023, and we are, you know, we're going to be celebrating.
Yes, indeed. Well, before we took the break, Doc, you mentioned the role of government, and I want to start here. What is the role of government and civil society in decolonizing education in Jamaica? What is their role?
I think we do need to start having some serious conversations as a people about who we are, our identity. What are those cultural practices and behaviors that we will accept? What are the values that ought to define Jamaicanness? The world has changed and continues to change, and Jamaica is such a powerful country. It's the biggest little country in the world. But I think we have lost and continue to lose much of the identity that distinguishes us from everybody else. And I think we need really to start having some serious conversations in our schools, in our classrooms, in our workplaces, in our churches, in our community groups, in our families, about those values and those behaviors and those morals that we will promote and accept as Jamaicans. So I think government and civil society both have a role to play in that regard. The whole matter of funding and the whole matter of how we place our children in school, the matter of how we, you know, the investments we make in education, the policy and legislative framework. You know, teacher training has not been any significant investment in teacher training for decades. And so whereas Jamaica funds, the government of Jamaica continues to fund education above and beyond nearly, you know, every other Caribbean country. We have to now ask ourselves, are we doing that which we ought to do, because the needs are different? We are in dire straits, and if we keep doing the same things, we're going to keep getting the same results. And we are at a crossroads now. So I believe Jamaica government, civil society, ordinary Jamaicans, institutions of society need to sit and need to start having these real hard, deep dive conversations to move away from the superficial things and the announcements and the politicizing of education, and to start effecting real, meaningful, structural changes and reform that will pivot us forward into a full destiny as a people.
If you would have to grade the government and civil society in terms of their performances so far and their role in trying to change the education system in Jamaica? Because it needs to change, Doc. And how do we start? Where do we start to implement decolonization in the classroom, in the teaching, at the learning level across the island of Jamaica? Where do we start? How?
Raskam, I tell you what. You know, there are some excellent examples of teachers and administrators and students and parents in our underserved schools. And we have them also in schools that are doing well. So we do need to promote the models of excellence. But, you know, earlier this week, I was in a discussion where we were talking about the Patterson Report, and we were looking at the recommendations. And I tell you this, and this is the plain truth, and, you know, the Patterson Report, a brilliant, wonderful report. Again, nothing significantly new, but a brilliant report nonetheless. And we do need to keep education in the forefront of our minds and certainly on the lips of everyone. But when we delved into the issues, the recommendations, the Ministry of Education has many of the strategies already conceptualized and developed, and they have been conceptualized and developed for years. We do well as a people. We do excellently as a people when it comes on to conceptualizing and envisioning and talking about what it is that we need to do. Where we need help, and much help is the point of implementation. And this is the point that I wish to make, that this is where we're lagging behind. How do we operationalize? How do we implement? Mm-hmm. How do we make decisions not for the political cycle, mm-hmm. but how do we make decisions for the people? Mm-hmm. We need to start making some decisions, and it's not that we're not short on ideas. The ideas are there. Mm-hmm. We have conceptualized many ideas. There are many reports sitting on shelves. There are many results and findings of projects and proposals and studies. Mm-hmm. And for one reason or the other, which I think is related to a political cycle, for one reason or the other, mm-hmm. Those who ought to make the decisions are unwilling to make the decisions because these decisions come with risk. But again, I say, if we keep doing the same thing we've always been doing, mm-hmm. the way we've always been doing them, then we're going to keep getting the results we've always been getting. And so at this point in our history, it requires bold leadership. Mm-hmm. It requires innovation. It requires country above self or organization. Mm-hmm. It requires guts and the will and the drive to do what's right for the people. And in truth be told, that is what leadership is. Mm-hmm. Not maintaining the status quo, but doing what's right for the people, doing what's right for our followers, doing what's right for Jamaicans. And so I think civil society, the government of Jamaica, and the people of Jamaica, I think we all have a role to play. And we are at a point now where we cannot continue keeping up the looks and appearances. We've got to get our hands dirty and be willing to make some meaningful changes.
Indeed.
Turn the system upside down.
Indeed.
So the outputs are different. And until the outputs change, the outcomes won't change.
Definitely. You know, when you talk about keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect a different result, it's called insanity. Because we cannot keep going down that road. I want to wrap up this morning with this. Let's talk about the linkage between colonization and the current state of underdevelopment in Jamaica. Crime, yes. Literacy, lack of infrastructure, etc. How decolonization can help us move the country forward in these areas? How can it?
Well, decolonization is about addressing inequalities and inequities. And I think if we were to decolonize and to come up with an education system in terms of the curricula, in terms of the structures, in terms of the funding models, in terms of the governance, in terms of how we engage stakeholders. I think if we were to derive a system that works best for us, I think if we were to come up with a model that is nuanced in a way that allows our people to achieve their full potential, I think it would certainly spin off and affect the other areas that you've cited, whether it's bureaucracy or economic development or, you know, matters relating to race and identity, how we engage each other, crime and violence, because all of these things have their genesis in institutions of society. And the school, I mean, not all children go to church, but all children go to school. And so the church has a role to play, but I believe the school and the family have an even greater role to play. And when we start talking about family life, and we start talking about school, and we start talking about church, and we start talking about community, when we get to those granular points of transformation and change, when we direct our efforts and our investments at those social groupings, I think we're going to experience great positive significant change. So I think once we decolonize and once we start, you know, we stop continuing going down this madhouse of routine and rudiments, and once we innovate and we create and we construct a system that is uniquely Jamaican, mm-hmm. one that responds to the needs of Jamaica, one that accounts for the vision of Jamaica, one that embraces the diversity of Jamaicans, mm-hmm. one that breeds the best of Jamaica. I think once we come up with that, a new system of education, it will give us the kinds of impetus, the kinds of outputs, the kinds of investments, the kinds of innovations and ideas that we need to transform every sphere, every sector of society. And it goes back to our schoolrooms, it goes back to our classrooms, it goes back to the policy makers, the caucuses in which we sit, it goes back to schools and universities, it goes back to our churches, it goes back to our family life. And these are the kinds of conversations I would love to see take place at every level in Jamaica, at the macro level, at the micro level, a national campaign, a national thrust, getting everyone involved about who we are, what do we stand for, what do we believe in, how are we going to get there, coming up with a strategic plan that is for every family, every child, every school, every church, every community, every organization, public or private or civil sector. I think once we can coalesce around a national plan that is articulated at both the macro level and the micro level, we will be successful in decolonizing us from our educational path and enabling us to construct a kind of approach and a kind of model that is uniquely ours. And that's what I'd like to commend to us for consideration.
You know, Dr. Smith, when I have these conversations, there's a lot of folks who look at me with a crooked eye. And I wonder mm-hmm. why. Now, it brings me to this, because from what you just said, I'm just sitting here listening to you and thinking, are we afraid of the truth? Are we afraid of changes? From what I understand, you know, the only thing that stays constant is change.
It's change.
And for some forsake reason, we are afraid of the changes. But yes. At the top of this interview, I mentioned the fact that we are emancipated. We are supposed to be independent. But we still have a colonial education system
mm-hmm.
that is not serving us too well.
Not serving, yes, absolutely not.
So it's time for decolonization of education in Jamaica. And it now brings me to my final question.
Yes.
How will we recognize that the decolonization has started? What will focus, what will bring something to our attention that this has started? Because one thing I recognize, Dr. Smith, is that even the teachings of Marcus Garvey, even the teachings of our first national hero, it is kind of minimal in the school system. How would we recognize decolonization?
I'm happy you said that. I'm happy you brought that point up, because I know the Ministry of Education has done a fantastic job in introducing The teachings of Marcus Garvey. In fact, that formula began earlier this year, and the process is being piloted. I would love for that to be widespread, wide scale. I'd love for that to be replicated in all schools, because Marcus Garvey talked a lot about social justice, and social justice is at the heart of this entire conversation about race and decolonizing education, etc., etc. Again, it's giving our people what they need. When we talk about social justice, we are looking at matters relating to human rights and access and equity and participation and diversity, inclusion, and people being able to vote, and people being able to have access to health and food and shelter. Education can't be divorced from it. It's a package. It's the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are at a point now where, Jamaica, and I understand the conversations around the states of emergence and how to deal with crime and violence, and we really need to start doing differently. And whereas there's a need to intervene through a number of tools, such as those on states of emergencies, and I have no challenge with that, but whilst we are intervening, we also need to be preventing. But again, the question is, what is the agenda around which all stakeholders are coalescing? What's the point of convergence? What are we working towards?
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's working hard, but everybody's working in isolation, in silo. So we need a national voice, a national call to action, so to speak, that is understood by everyone across the length and breadth of Jamaica. And so we can't help but notice, given what's happening in Jamaica now, that Jamaica is at a precarious point in its history, in its evolution, its development.
Mm.
We cannot continue killing each other off. If it's not domestic violence, it's crime, it's road fatalities. We cannot continue like that. We have to stop. And whilst we engage mechanisms that will cause us and encourage us, if not force us to stop, whilst we are doing that, simultaneously, concurrently, we have to be doing some preventative work.
Mm.
So we are teaching our children how to think differently, so we are challenging the popular culture, so that we're giving people a different mindset, a different approach to life. We're teaching them conflict resolution skills. We're teaching them how to fish as opposed to be dependent on a fish. We're teaching them how to be entrepreneurial. We're
mm-hmm.
teaching them how to make decisions. We're teaching them how to construct good social order, so they can have conversations with each other, so that culturally Jamaica can regain its place. Economically, we can regain our place. And when we talk about family life and socialization and community and church, we can get back to the point where it was the village that raised the entire child, because
indeed,
our values are the same, if not similar. So I don't think no one in Jamaica should not be able to recognize that we're at a crossroads.
Indeed.
And the clarion call this morning is for us to have some conversation with and among and between ourselves, and that there has to be a national call to action. We have to determine what are the values, and all of us, whether we are in civil society, private society, the diaspora, all of us need to come up with one single agenda and run that agenda for a good 5 to 7 years. But that's the other thing too, because we keep changing thrust and we keep changing strategy even before we start seeing the fruit. Even before we start bearing the fruit from the initiatives, we change. We're not giving ourselves time to mature. So the call is urgent. The call is now.
Indeed.
We are at a critical point, and I think there needs to be conversations at every level, and all of us need to get involved in the conversation. We need to agree as political parties, as churches, as communities, as uptown, downtown, Jamaicans abroad, Jamaicans overseas, Jamaicans locally. We all need to have a conversation and agree on a plan of action and coalesce our efforts around those points of action, so that we can create and construct a different kind of society.
Indeed. You know, Dr. Smith, we're at a serious crossroads. We're at a very serious crossroads. And we're going to have to choose if we go left or right. We're going to have to choose if we go up or down. I know the direction should be up. Up, up, up. And we all have to get involved. I have already started the conversation. I will continue the conversation. That's why I have this program, Dr. Smith. I use this program at all costs to uplift my country, to uplift my community, to uplift my family. I'm not leaving anyone out. But are they willing to come with us? We see that's the problem. We see the problem. We have identified the problem. And now we are working towards the solution. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Smith, for taking time out of your busy schedule. It's your first appearance here, you know, Dr. Smith. But it won't be your last. It won't be your last. And I feel and I hear the passion. And I just got a text to say you're very passionate about education. And you're very passionate about what you do. And we're going to have to continue this conversation.
Well, Rustin, thank you. I'll avail myself as best I can. I really look forward to continuing conversations in about education, because education really is the way out. And the economic prosperity is great. Mm. But we also need to teach people how to think and how to behave and how to live while they become economically prosperous. So I'll avail myself as best I can. And I'm grateful to you for raising the consciousness and keeping it on the forefront of all our. So thank you ever so much.
You're so welcome, Dr. Smith. To you and the family, enjoy your holiday, and we'll talk very soon, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thanks as well. To you anyway.
One love. Dr. Maurice D. Smith, ladies and gentlemen, he is a very passionate individual when it comes to education. And I tell you, the conversation this morning, decolonizing education in Jamaica, well worth my time. And I did hope that it's worth your time too, ladies and gentlemen. We've come to the end of our presentation this Saturday morning. Waiting on the other side of the 11:30 hour, it is going to be the Wake Up Radio team. But before I go this Saturday morning, stop by SY Grace today. Enter the raffle, ladies and gentlemen. Mountain Peak will be giving and sharing some sampling, some ginger tea and some coffee in this cold, cold weather. Irie Jam comes in at 1 p.m. Soundchat. Link up at 6 and Soundchat at 8 p.m. Groovin' Radio was executively produced by Clement Hume and Christopher Roberts. Groovin' Radio was hosted by Rasklem. Contributing to our presentation this Saturday morning, our musical presentation, we featured the one and only Mr. Burning Spear right here on Groovin' Radio. It was followed by our community engagement segment where Dr. Roy Street, the founder and CEO of OID, the Organization for International Development, they're getting ready for their 2023 medical mission in Jamaica in January, ladies and gentlemen. We got news courtesy of the Jamaica Gleaner, Jamaica Now with Mr. Jovan Johnson. Anthony Turner joined us for ER Report, and he provided the bio for our very special mic check guest this Saturday morning, Dr. Maurice D. Smith. Decolonizing education in Jamaica. Do remember, ladies and gentlemen, get your tickets for Chef Garfield and DJ Roy's Black and White Affair, the big New Year's Eve ball inside the Resort World Casino, given Tuesdays, every Tuesday, ladies and gentlemen, at Genesis One Restaurant. My closing remarks this morning, in light of all the suicide that we have been seeing, and we have seen now, ladies and gentlemen, where many different people from many walks of life have taken their own life, including this past week when DJ Twitch actually took his own life. My closing remarks this morning is entitled, Cover Me. Cover Me. Ladies and gentlemen, please, cover me.